It's time for Cofield and Company.
The Blues at the bench are realizing that they are going to be champions. 10 seconds to go. The longest wait for a first title any team in this league has had. For the first time in their history, the St. Louis Blues are the Stanley Cup champions.
Please direct your attention to the ice for the presentation of the Conn Smythe Trophy to the most valuable player of the 2019 Stanley Cup playoff.
Ryan O'Reilly, come get the Conn Smythe Trophy.
Now, here's Steve Cofield.
Man, if you give me a Boston team not winning a title and Gary Bettman booed every year, I'm good. Totally good with it. Steve Cofield, Adam Candy, Jared, steering the ship. Are we going to stay afloat for this final hour before we hand it off to Game 6 NBA Finals? Pre-game with our buddy Kevin Winter and John Barry. That's coming up in 55 minutes, so not a whole lot of time. Let's get to it.
Battle Born Injury Lawyers presents the Big 5 at 4. Number 5.
Man, I've been dying to get Adam Candy in here. He's a gaming expert, LegalSportsReport.com. He's in as the company. There's been so much going on, Adam, last couple of weeks with Illinois and New York trying to push legalized sports gambling across the finish line. So they came up with something that we really hadn't seen in any of these other states. Both states are trying to have in-venue sports betting, maybe go as far as in-venue sports books. And we're talking about venues like, you know, Soldier Field or Wrigley or Yankee Stadium or whatever Met Stadium is called now, Neuchâtel, you know, the Bills Stadium. What is going on here in both states? And are they different, too, in terms of the way they're approaching it?
Very different. And I'll give you a quick pitch to go to LegalSportsReport.com, where we cover the issues around the industry all year long. We cover all this legislation in depth, and we can tell you all about both Illinois and New York. So in short, as legal sports betting has grown in the past year, some states are doing sports books and casinos. Some states are doing mobile sports betting. They want to do it just on your phone. Here's the middle step. We only seen this in Washington, D.C., where Ted Leonsis, the owner of the Capitals, has pushed this hard. He's really wanting to create sports betting inside the stadium. Here's what happened in Illinois. They put together a bill at the very last second of the legislature, and the thing is a disaster. It is a straight-up overall disaster. But piece of that bill is that you might have sports betting inside a place like Soldier Field. So the concept would be that it might not be your traditional windows and tellers. You might just have kiosks, right? You might just have these terminals where you can walk up to the terminal on the concourse and place a bet before the game, place a bet during the game. These kiosks, if you haven't used them, they're pretty user-friendly. They're pretty easy to get to. And for the novice who doesn't know anything about how to place a bet, they're a lot less intimidating than walking up to a ticket writer and having to explain whatever it is that you want to bet. So that's coming in Illinois. This bill has been passed. We're just waiting on the governor's signature. The governor had factored in hundreds of millions of dollars from sports betting revenue, good luck with that, into his budget. So that's coming.
Okay. Well, that's motivation to get it done.
And that's the whole point.
Cut through the red tape.
I mean, you know, the forecast, we've seen articles come out and say legal sports betting hasn't produced anything like what we thought it was going to in terms of revenue. Yeah, the forecasts that you're talking about have been totally unrealistic. People are trying to patch holes in budgets with sports betting. Anyone who knows the business from here knows what a low margin business it is. Ultimately, you have to have huge volume to be depending on that kind of revenue. Now, you talked about New York. Yankee Stadium, Madison Square Garden, betting in the halls. They haven't gotten anything done in New York yet. They're still trying to. The law right now only allows sports betting at 4 casinos upstate. And when I talk about upstate, I'm not talking about drive 2 hours. I'm talking about way up in the Catskills. Like, for those of you who know New York, you're not driving from New York City to go place a bet. So they're talking about putting it inside the stadium in New York as well. Look, here's my take on all this. You can put it in the stadium, and that's a great middle step, but if it's on your phone, you don't have to leave your seat inside the stadium. That's where you want to be. You want to be betting on your phone during the game. You going to go up to the concourse to place an in-play bet? Are you going to wait behind 10 people to get to a kiosk to try to bet on what's going to happen the next period? No. You want to do it on your phone. So Illinois is going to have a form of mobile sports betting. It's a little ugly, but they are going to have it. New York is trying to get it done. There's some constitutional issues right now. But if you look at New Jersey, and the numbers just came out yesterday on New Jersey last month, 81%, 4 out of every 5 bets in New Jersey are being placed on a smartphone right now.
Yep.
This is the future. You can put the kiosks in the stadiums if you want, but on your phone is the future.
Well, we've heard a couple of things. One, are owners of sports franchises actually pushing for this? Because they're like, we need people at the games. Maybe not at Wrigley, and maybe not at some NFL games, but other stadiums are like, yeah, we could use a couple extra thousand people here if the lure is just to go bet the game and watch it.
The lore might be a little stronger than I want you in the stadium. The lore might be that the sportsbook owner himself the franchise owner himself wants to own a piece of the sportsbook. That's where it's really at.
Okay.
They want to try to get the owner to own a
piece
of this. It's a complicated situation in each state depending on how much of the sportsbook does that person own, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you own enough of a percentage that it tips off the threshold for being vetted, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Does the owner actually own it directly, or does he own a piece of the company that comes in to operate the sports book? There's a lot of ways around this. In the end, what the leagues, the owners, everyone is looking for is a direct cut of the revenue without having to worry about, do I get them in the stadium? Do they buy the beers? And, oh, do they go to the kiosk?
We've mentioned this issue many times. If the owner of the Cubs has a piece of the sports book and a call hinges, you know, a review late in the game, right? What if it involves win share benefits for the owner of the Cubs? What if Major League Baseball were involved and somehow they're getting a cut? This is something we've talked about from the very beginning. Don't we have to have a system where owners and the league have no part of the revenue? Because then, I mean, conspiracy theorists are going to go crazy. Like, of course that was the call because that was the beneficial side money-wise to that owner or the league.
And that's why when the leagues have gone out there and talked about this concept of an integrity fee, which is really just a cut of the revenue, the first thing they went out there and did was ask for 1% of handle, which if you know anything about sports betting, you're taking 20% of the profit off the top and giving it to the league for what? But at Legal Sports Report, one of our writers, Dustin Gauker, talks over and over again. He'll take a tweet that happens with something, a bad call in a game, something that looks a little fishy on the field, and he'll just retweet it with hashtag integrity fees,
mm-hmm.
because that's the same concept. The league should not be getting a cut directly from this. They're asking for trouble down the road when it comes to not just conspiracy theorists, but real questions about how their officiating works.
Back to the brick and mortar books in the stadiums or a kiosk. Will Nevada fall in line down the road? If this works for Illinois and New York and other states, do we fall in line and all of a sudden at T-Mobile and at Raider Stadium and really any venue in town, minor league baseball stadium, you know, maybe a new soccer stadium, will we have kiosks there?
I would be very surprised. I don't think the existing casinos are going to be too excited about that idea of allowing kiosks into the stadiums. I can tell you by talking to a couple of folks at books around town, kiosks really haven't caught on here in Vegas. People are used to the experience of going up to the window, talking to a ticket writer. Kiosks really have not been nearly as popular in Vegas as they have been other places. You look at Rhode Island, you look at New Jersey, there's been a lot more popularity when you talk about the in-person sportsbook experience for these kiosks. I don't see that catching on in Vegas.
Number 4.
St. Louis Blues win the cup last night. One of the players on the Blues is former Golden Knight David Perron. You have any? You didn't make the sale, but do you have any? We'll call it seller's remorse, even though they let him walk. Seller's remorse with Perron.
All I'm saying is George McPhee made a big deal after last season about how much his second line needed an overhaul, and we cannot argue with the results of what he created with that second line. I mean, obviously the two line really became the one line for the Golden Knights, but what did David Perron do in the playoffs this year? Played every game. 16 points in 26 games for David Perron. This year, he played only 57 games in St. Louis, less than the 70 he played in Vegas last year. 16 goals in those 70 games. This year, 23 goals, 23 assists, 46 points in 57 games for David Perron. Hey, seller's remorse might be a little strong, but he sure did the job in St. Louis this year.
number three.
On to game six, NBA. Pre-game starts here in 47 minutes. How much of a factor do we think the emotion surrounding Kevin Durant's injury, how much will that emotion boost the Golden State Warriors?
I actually think it's going to be the opposite. I don't see it. I think that the emotion all got spent in Game 5. I think the emotion around KD all got spent in Game 5 to come back and win that game. Now, the emotion of Oracle closing, the last ever game in Oakland, in the town, playing in front of a crowd that's going to be hyped up because some of those fans will never be able to afford a ticket across the bay in San Francisco, I could see where the emotion of Oracle has a lot to it. But the emotion of KD, I don't see it.
They're honoring KD with a towel tonight. Oh, sorry, I don't know why I'm laughing, but I don't know why. What else should they do, Jared? What do you want?
No, it's just...
It's fresh.
We got you a towel.
I mean, you got to pull it together in a day and a half. He can't be there. You know, he got the surgery done in New York. He gets a towel. What do you want him to do? Raise his jersey to the rafters tonight? Like, he might be back, he might not.
No, it seems like that's just such a PR thing. Like, someone in public relations is like, we have to do something, towel!
Is it to dry his tears?
Oh.
Hey, shout out to the four Knicks fans who showed up outside the hospital in New York holding signs for KD after his surgery. Those are my people right there. Those are people who are doing the real PR, Jared Justice. That is the marketing we need to get Kevin Durant and his one Achilles into a Knicks uniform.
Did you see his IG post?
I did.
That he put up with the injury after the surgery, yep. Leg all wrapped up. 2.6 million likes. This is a guy who was very disliked by sports fans. Boy, the narrative has changed. We talked about this the other day. You got people who are sending prayers out there for Kevin Durant. There are some people, though, who are sticking to their guns. Did you see Salerno on comp? Tweeted out, if you're praying for Kevin Durant, if you're praying for Kevin Durant and you're not immediate family or dating him, you're an effing psycho.
Solid. Solid take. I agree.
I'm just saying that there could be a reason or two beyond that, like maybe a Knicks fan.
Okay, that's the third category.
Oh, is he a Knicks fan?
See? Or if you're praying for Kevin. No, if you're praying, I am not immediate family. Yeah. I am not dating him.
But
although, I mean, for the right, yeah. You know, for the right financial arrangement, nothing's out of the question. If you're a Knicks fan, you're not praying for Kevin Durant right now. You're doing it wrong. You're absolutely doing it wrong. Do you not see the opening, the opportunity here for a Knicks fan? Do you not see the fact that we are so used to buying broken down players that this is what James Dolan is going to get super excited about? He's going to say, whoa, you didn't tell me this guy only had one Achilles. Bring him in. I don't care about Max. We're going to go full under the table. What is it? Oh, I'm going to forget who it was. Vin Baker. You're going to go fill Vin Baker extra contract under the table for Kevin Durant. I'm praying for him. You can take that, Salerno.
Did you want to ask me a question about the emotion of the series? I know you wanted to pose one about
I like how you're setting this one up.
Well, where I am now with the Warriors.
I'm just saying you've been very, very clear about your dislike for the Golden State franchise, but for the Golden State dynasty. And now we have the perfect opportunity to have just a little softy feel for Golden State. Just a little bit of the softening of the heart for Golden State. This could be like the Hogan's reverse heel turn at the end of the career, right? This could be like Hollywood Hogan coming back around and being Hulkamania one more time. This could be like the Warriors going from scrappy underdog, oh my gosh, Steph Curry's ankles are great, Steve Kerr rejected the Knicks and went to Golden State, and now Golden State is a dynasty, but now you don't have to hate him as much anymore. Or do you?
Strong pitch, but we went through this the other day. I had the turn on Durant and especially the Warriors was the second half of Game 5. That's it. I'm done. I was okay. I wasn't rooting for them to win, but I was okay with them winning. No, absolutely. I'm not rooting for the Warriors to win the series.
Were you rooting them for them to win Game 5 based on the Durant injury or just because you want another game?
Probably more of the Durant injury. I felt bad for him. I know. I have a heart every once in a while.
Look at you, softy.
Amazing.
You need to rip that Boston Sucks shirt right off put a KD shirt right under it.
There's limits to his kindness.
There is no flip of the narrative with the Red Sox.
I'm not saying
or the city of Boston, where I'm ever going to root for a Boston team because something tragic happened.
I'm not suggesting.
Sorry,
that.
I'm heartless that way. It ain't going to happen.
No, I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying, for the purpose of this moment right here, right now, you could have the KD shirt under that shirt and just go full Cam Newton Superman and open it up and be like, that's my guy.
No.
It's your own heel turn.
Do you think I would ever rip apart this Boston Sucks shirt? Ever?
What if I promised to buy you another one?
Okay, well. Possibly.
All right.
But we're going to have to set it up because I'm not strong enough to rip a t-shirt. So we got to cut the little notch and then kind of rip it the right way.
Yeah, see, I like where we're going here. This is why we have video, Steve Cofield.
Yes. Top two stories.
Number two.
All right, what happens tonight at Oracle in terms of the atmosphere? It is the last game ever at Oracle. The official gentrifying of the GSW fan base will happen next year. Candy already said it. No one from Oakland, very few. Very few, I think, even middle-class folks, lower-middle-class folks will get into this freaking palace on the Bay. What happens tonight? Does everyone rush in there, or is there going to be another invasion of Raptors fans like there were the last time around? There were like 2,000 Raptors fans in the arena as the GSW fans just bolted.
Of course they are. Of course they are. Look at what happened in Boston last night. Look at what happened with the Blues fans showing up in Boston. If you've got a chance to go see your team win a championship, even if you're some newbie bandwagon Toronto fan, Toronto's a rich city, man. There's a lot of money in Toronto. There's a lot of people who can afford to make this trip out to the Bay and say, you know what, I'm going to take my one shot at this. Do you remember what T-Mobile looked like for Game 5 last year? Do you remember how much redder that arena was? How many Caps fans invaded the fortress, which is something I get to say when Adam Hill's not here. They were all here. They're going to do it, man. I did it. I remember doing it in 2005. I remember when I had no money as a preps writer at the Las Vegas Sun, marshaling up the last of the cash I had in the savings account, driving down to Anaheim when the New Jersey Devils had a chance to win the Stanley Cup, and firing my cash, saying, here you go. Here's my $300. I'm going to see my team win the cup. No, I'm not. I am going to see them lose terribly 5-1. But you know what? I was willing to take the chance. And so I think the Toronto Raptors fans are going to show up. But I still think it's the Oracle atmosphere tonight. I still think that Golden State is going to show up. And I still think they're going to make this one hell of an atmosphere for Toronto to try to win in.
There'll be at least 1,000 Raptors fans in the arena tonight. I was looking at a secondary market buy-in, $590. To get in the building tonight at Oracle, Game 7, if there is a Game 7 in Toronto, $1,900.
Wow.
So for Toronto fans, they're like, hell, I can take a trip, you know, across our country and theirs, go in, root against the enemy, basically pay two-thirds of a, you know, one-seat price for two, I'm good to go.
Been there before versus never been there before, and that's what the prices turn out to be, and I want to reclaim my Devils fandom, 03, not 05. I knew it as soon as I said it. I think that the Raptors fans are all basing their prices off what Drake paid, right? Don't you think he's driving the whole market up for everybody? Don't you think when Drake pays like $50,000 for a courtside seat, he's just skewing the market for everyone?
Top story.
Okay, maybe not.
Number one.
All right, we want to address this rumor about Major League Baseball. Again, this rumor, there's been multiple rumors. It seems like, well, let's just set it up correctly. There was a rumor out there about, you know, the Rio being sold. It looks like it's going to be sold. What they're going to do with the property, whoever the new owner is beyond us. We don't know yet. So people were making the tie. Hey, there's a lot of property there. Major League Baseball is looking to expand at some point. Let's build a Major League Baseball stadium on the Rio site. That seems to have slowed down. I guess rumors, according to a good blogger, Vital Vegas, says, hey, the buyer who may have been in for baseball is out now. Then things started churning for some property down south of the South Point. Someone's buying up a lot of property down there. Lots of room for a Major League Baseball stadium. Your reaction?
There was lots of room for a football stadium down there, too, wasn't there?
Yeah.
That didn't really turn out, did it? Lots of room near the Rio. That doesn't look to be turning out, does it? Look, I'm not here to rip on Scott from Vital Vegas. Like, he's got his information. He's got a lot of rumors that have turned out to be correct, but this is wrong. This is not happening. It's not there. Keith Law from ESPN even jumped on it today. I don't know how Keith Law found his way over to the Vital Vegas Twitter account, but Keith Law from ESPN simply said, "This is totally false. Please stop."
Which part? Aww. Major League Baseball to Vegas or that stadium site?
Specific to the stadium site, to that rumor. But again, we've been doing this for a long time. My buddy Rob Misch covered this extensively 03 to 05 when we were at the Sun together, when we were talking about the Expos move and were they going to go to Washington, were they going to come here. There was some serious momentum back then. Like, there was a real chance back when Vegas was still the bridesmaid to everyone, back before it became a real major league city. Look, do I believe it more as a possibility now because of the success of the Golden Knights? Yes. Do I think that Major League Baseball is hot on replicating what happened in Arizona, where they're lucky to get 15,000 people inside a dome stadium right now? No, not at all. I don't think this is a baseball city the same way it's been for hockey and for basketball. I have a really hard time buying the rumors of what becomes a baseball-only stadium when we're talking about T-Mobile and Sphere and the Raiders Stadium, and there's a lot of competition that comes up in terms of that, and you wonder what they're going to do with that stadium. I just don't see where it comes up. Damn. I don't see where it fits.
Candy raining all over the parade. How dare you?
That is me, anti-Homer Adam Candy.
We had Buster Olney on a couple weeks ago, and he said that Vegas would be in the running for an expansion team along with Nashville and Montreal and maybe Charlotte and Portland, Mexico City would be a long shot, but do you think we're just going to be used as a negotiating pawn?
All right. With all respect to Buster, what makes anyone think Major League Baseball is in a place to expand right now? I mean, we've seen the pictures from places like those Kansas City White Sox games where there are 500 people in the stadium. Why?
No, but that didn't stop the NHL. The NHL has some markets. They could have easily moved the team to Las Vegas.
We're getting the Marlins?
MLS has 5 dead markets. They keep expanding.
I mean, sure.
To your question, what makes anyone think? They don't think. What they're thinking about is an expansion fee.
They are thinking
about
it.
And they'll deal with small attendance in these other markets when they have to deal with it.
I don't see where Major League Baseball, which has far more than 5 dead markets right now, is going to be trying to get that out of Vegas. Look, can we talk about a ticket drive that came up for the Golden Knights where you came up with 14,000, 15,000 season ticket deposits? Yeah, and that looked great inside a 17,000-seat arena. You're talking about Major League Baseball. You've got to build for minimum 35,000, mm-hmm. if not closer to 40.
And you got to me, you have to average 25 to be a viable market.
Easily. And we haven't even talked about where the Raiders PSL situation is right now. There's only so much income to go around in any major league city. And I know I brought up the point about the Diamondbacks in Phoenix, and look what happened with the Coyotes versus the Golden Knights. Baseball's a very different animal. It is a very long season. You're talking about 80 plus games. You're talking about 20 out of 30 franchises this year that simply chose not to try to win. I don't think that's going to play in this city. And we know why the expansion draft rules got tweaked the way they were for the Golden Knights. They knew that they needed to put a winner in here. And they did. And congratulations to Vegas. I don't see where it works for baseball.
Missed the latest edition of Cofield & Company? Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts.
There's Thompson, hand in his face, drills a three-pointer. Just perfect form. Thompson hesitated, one dribble, fires, and connects. Thompson finds an opening, three-pointer's up. It's good! Klay Thompson from downtown. Back out to Green. Thompson, one fake, one dribble, one shot. Got it! Golden State retakes the lead.
It's Cofield & Company.
Yeah, there's a theme there, Jared. Jared's like, that's a lot of Klay Thompson. Yeah, they need a lot of Klay Thompson tonight. Crank it up. Super freak. The girl's a super freak. Yeah, yeah. Klay Thompson's a super freak. How about that? 23 pointers made in these finals. Same deal for Steph Curry. We'll get to the three-point shooting here in a couple of minutes. Adam Candy's in. Jared Cofield, 24 minutes until pregame starts for Game 6 in the NBA Finals. If you haven't been following, the Raptors lead it 3-2, dramatic comeback by the Warriors after Kevin Durant goes down with a shredded Achilles. They're down 6. 3 minutes left in Game 5. 3 three-pointers. They're up 3. not going to say they never looked back because, well, they had a dogfight down the stretch and had to make a great defensive play. Draymond Green getting a hand on the final shot by Kyle Lowry. We discussed coaching a little bit the other day on that final series, like who did a better job. But beyond that, we really haven't talked a whole lot of coaching. We did discuss Nick Nurse calling a timeout in the midst of or on the end of a 12-2 run, which was weird. Is coaching a big factor in this series?
Feels to me like this is the least we've ever talked about coaching when it comes to an NBA Finals. And I think we've got both ends of the spectrum completely here. We've got a Toronto Raptors head coach who 5 years ago was the head coach of the Rio Grande Valley Vipers. Go Vipers. Who for 5 years prior to this was an assistant coach in the NBA and is in his first year as an NBA head coach. What's his name? I don't know. Go ask five people on the street right now who the coach of the Raptors is.
Nobody before the finals, most people would
nobody
have
no
clue.
Nobody has any idea.
Although
Nick
he does
nurses.
Have his own hat, but I don't think he really has his own hat. Have you seen this?
I haven't seen the hat.
He's got the NN hat, but I looked up. There are multiple companies with a logo, so I don't think it's a Nick Nurse hat, but people have had fun thinking like, hey, this no-name coach actually has his own hat.
Yeah, my friend is a third-grade teacher in Phoenix, and I just saw her. And her name's Teresa Curry, and she showed up with a baseball cap with a TC on it. And I looked at her, I was like, where do I get a cap with my initials? She's like, yeah, I got this from friends in Telluride, Colorado. I don't think Nick Nurse is wearing his own branded hat right now. I don't think he's Roger Federer with the RF.
There's a site here that says there is a Nick Nurse hat. As of like 2 weeks ago.
As of 2 weeks ago.
I'm saying as of 2 weeks ago, I didn't see it.
Wow. No one knows who Nick Nurse is prior to talking about the timeout and the calls at the end of Game 5. No one has any idea, but here's the crazy part to me. So who did you hand first-year head coach Nick Nurse this year? You handed him Kawhi Leonard, who, yes, is a transcendent superstar in terms of talent. He is also a guy who feuded for an entire season with what is reputed to be the best organization in all of basketball, one of the best coaches in the history of professional sports. Did he kill Greg Popovich? No, far from it. But he goes to Toronto, and now Nick Nurse, who's never been an NBA head coach, is supposed to build around Kawhi Leonard. And they hand it in pieces. You've got Kyle Lowry. You give him Marc Gasol. Pascal Siakam becomes the player Marvin Menzies always knew he would be. And so this is what Nick Nurse has had to do in year one. I don't think he's gotten enough credit, to be honest. I really don't, for getting this team as far as he has around Kawhi Leonard. And then we go to the other side. Have we really heard anything about Steve Kerr? Ever really hear anything about Steve Kerr?
I heard a little mocking on Steve Kerr after game 3, I think it was. Yeah, John Murray came after him from the Westgate and was like, yeah, legacy coach, huh? What's going on here? Come on, pull it together.
Yeah, we are firmly into Phil Jackson territory on Steve Kerr at this point, right?
Where but you he gets no credit.
Hand him the roster. Well, anybody could win with that roster. Jared Justice could coach that roster to the NBA championship. Well, no.
Well, I would say he deserves credit, certainly in the last game, for picking them up off the deck.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, you go to the break there, and everyone on the team knows something really bad has happened to Kevin Durant. For the team to come out and actually play well in the second half and have a spurt when they look like they were dead and buried with 3 minutes left. Yeah, a lot of that's coaching. A lot of it's on the players, too.
It is, but we're talking about emotions more than X's and O's. When we're talking about talent level that the Golden State Warriors have, do you need to tell them how to run the system at this point? No, they've been doing it for 5 years. You've had the same core for 5 years. But when you talk about picking up the emotions of the team, I think that's one place you really can start to talk about coaching. Look, Steve Kerr has won 3 NBA championships in 4 years. He has a playoff record of 77-27. He has a regular season winning percentage of 79%. I get it. You handed him a talented roster. He walked into a great situation. But sometimes those are the most difficult ones to do something with in the first place. You're managing egos. You're managing playing time. You're managing minutes. It's not like it all just falls into place magically. You have to get guys to buy into roles. You've had to deal with Draymond Green. You have had to find a way to manage Draymond Green for the last 5 years. Look, I'm not trying to say put him in the Hall of Fame right now, but we haven't talked about coaching at all in these finals, and I think it's underrated on both sides.
Is that winning percentage include the Luke Walton, or is it without Luke Walton?
You know that Steve Kerr was only one phone call away that whole time.
I'm just saying, I'd like to know, like what's the discrepancy? Like, how far does that number dive without it gifting him Luke Walton's wins?
Okay. Go ahead. So the record does include, they do go on Steve Kerr's record to answer for you. 322 wins in 410 games.
I was mostly just going for the joke.
Generally are, sir. You generally are.
Is he going to be saddled with that Luke Walton stuff forever? Like, Luke did it. You know, you really got to coach these guys and look at how bad Luke was or mediocre Luke was with the Lakers.
Regular season, full strength, no injuries. What exactly were you saying that the Golden State Warriors had to worry about at that point?
I think Steve Kerr's a good coach. You nailed it in the middle of what you were saying there with the massaging egos and managing, you know, great players and also keeping guys hungry. Really, every great coach in the history of the NBA has dealt with the same thing, like the super teams. Much of their job is to make sure you're ready for the playoffs, that you're peaking at the right time, and that you can minimize the ego clashes. Think about all the great coaches and all the great teams. At some point, you'd expect the Lakers and Celtics of the 80s, like, well, you know what? They had a unique opportunity because they had a foil. Like, there was always a great team they could go against. But, like, to knock Phil Jackson for the two teams that he had championship runs with, I mean, those teams were full of egos. Obviously, you had to have Jordan, you know, as he's just annihilating people in practice and screaming at everybody. You got to, you know, massage the egos of the guys who are around him. Pippen clearly needed to be massaged. Kobe Shaq is one of the most challenging coaching jobs of all time. So the great coaches all deal with this. So, I mean, and we could, and I know we said this. I believe I was doing sports radio back then. I know we said it back then. I'm sure if there were sports radio back in the 80s, you could talk about it. Hell, if you wanted to go back to the Celtics of the 60s, all these coaches got the same treatment. They can't. I mean, they're really great coaches. Look at the talent. Yeah. Yes. You have to be a great coach to win with a lot of talent. Yes. They deserve credit.
And they deserve a lot more credit than they've gotten. And I say that specific to Steve Kerr. But if you made me pick one of the two right now and say, who has really done the job that hasn't gotten the credit that it deserves, it is the coach who nobody knows his name. It's Nick Nurse. It's Nick Nurse having this team on the verge of winning a championship. And realistically, even with Kawhi Leonard, think back to the beginning of this series. We just watched Golden State blitz through the conference finals. We just watched Portland get run off the floor, even without KD. No one expected Toronto to even be in the position it is now. And I am not trying to give you the equivocation to say, good job, Toronto, you won three games. No matter what happens from here, you're fine. No, Toronto still needs to close this thing out. And I do think Toronto's closing this thing out tonight. But ultimately, Nick Nurse has had to, when it comes to massaging egos and managing personalities, could you find something tougher than handing a first-year head coach, a guy in Kawhi Leonard, who couldn't get along with Greg Popovich? That's impossible, man, and he's gotten it done.
We've heard nothing about it, right? We've heard no credit, and we've also heard no problems.
Exactly.
There's a ton of keys we can get into. There's an obvious one, because too often we talk about offense, but we'll stick on the offense. Klay Thompson's three-point shooting in these finals, insane. He's made 20. He's taken 35. He's shooting 58% from three. Steph's been good. The percentage nowhere near the same. He's 20 of 56. But if that team has a chance to swing the ball to Klay Thompson, he's been just about automatic, and they've had no answers for him because here's the great thing about the Splash Brothers, and even when it's just the Splash Brothers and Draymond Green and then, you know, that surrounding cast, because it's not DeMarcus Cousins all-star right now. It's DeMarcus Cousins probably playing at 60%. With this group, you have to put so much effort into freaking stopping Steph Curry, stopping him from penetrating, stopping him from destroying you off the dribble, stopping him from getting open threes. And you see so many scrambles, especially by Van Vliet, that every time you're throwing two guys the direction of Steph Curry, that gives Klay a chance to be wide open, and he doesn't freaking miss.
Pick your poison. That's the entirety of what the Golden State offense is designed around. It's designed around the fact that they have so much talent in so many places that you're going to make a choice at some point. Are you going to blitz the PNR? Are you going to go right after Steph? Well, he's as good a passer as he is a shooter. And that's what you tend to forget about Steph Curry, is that he is truly a point guard. No one wants to credit him with that. Steph Curry is a point guard. The Golden State offense doesn't require him to do that. You want to play him one-on-one? He is going to run you up, down, all around, through screens, around screens. He's going to back off the screen. He's going to set the screen and become the screener and flare out. There is no way to defend them overall. And when Klay Thompson gets going like this, because this is what Klay Thompson does, right? When Klay Thompson gets hot, Klay Thompson has that 40-point game on, you know, 15 shots where he only dribbles the ball twice. Like, that's Klay Thompson at his finest. And yet here we are in Game 6 of the NBA Finals, and the Golden State Warriors have had to scratch, claw, and fight to even win the two games that they've won. We're talking about a game where Golden State was up 106-104 with 5 seconds to go in Game 2 and needed a last-second block in Game 5, or else they would have lost five games to Toronto by now.
Well, the flip side of all the great shooting is that their defense is just crushed right now because Klay Thompson can't play the defense he normally plays. Steph Curry is not a good defender, and for as much as they need some sort of, you know, inside scoring from DeMarcus Cousins, he's just a complete liability on defense. He can't cover any of the big guys on the other side, and if you draw him away from the basket, you know, and you're pick and pop, pick and roll, he's playing 60%. I mean, I give the guy credit because he can barely move. You watch him try to dunk. I don't think he can dunk right now. He cannot lift himself off the floor.
No, there's not a lot of boogie.
I'm not, again,
right now,
not bagging on him. He's a liability defensively right now, and that Warriors team, especially when you start going to the bench, they just can't play the D that you've, you know, come to expect them to play over the years. Quick timeout here. Pre-game's coming up a little after 5 o'clock. We got big game 6. Warriors win. This thing goes to a game 7. Raptors win. The obvious, they are the NBA champions.
It's Cofield and Company's Eye on Sports Gambling.
I'm going to kill your bookmaker. I'm going to rip his throat out. I will step on his throat until the man chokes. Let me tell you how. Winners, 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 winners. Free, 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 free.
All right, we'll get to some numbers here. Give out some free picks. This is why we like free picks. Because if you track them, well, they were free. Man, there's some stuff going on. We'll have to hit it tomorrow when we have some more time. There's some stuff going on over at the Action Network. And we had Chad Millman on a bunch. But, man, the last couple of weeks, they've had a slew of their experts look a little shaky on what has been on the web. And then suddenly things changed on the record. Are you guys tracking this at all at Legal Sports Report, or is it kind of outside your purview?
I would definitely encourage people to check out the Daily Beast piece on Darren Rovell that came out today, former ESPNer.
Basic gist. So here's the deal with Rovell. So he made his hay as a business guy, sort of a, you know, let's capture the scene type, you know, Twitter, social media dude. He moves over to the Action Network, which is all about sports gambling, and now he's a sports gambling expert, which I never bought because when I saw him and watched him on the ESPN beat, I thought like he just stole a bunch of stuff from Vegas. He did it often to people in the market. An incredibly irritating guy as well. So now is he making picks or he's claiming he's making big bets?
It's not even so much that. They made a point today of coming out after this article and saying, well, we don't pitch Darren Rovell as a gambling expert. All right, but you put him on a website that is dedicated to action. What do you think people are going to think when they see his face? They're going to associate him with this guy knows something about the gambling industry. He doesn't. This isn't where he made his bones. Whether you like Rovell or whether you hate him, that's the whole concept. He is one of those like or hate kind of guys in a Stephen A. Smith sort of way where he thrives on the social media hate. That's who he's become. But man, oh man, you're in a dangerous place because you think about what happened with the anthem, right? It was the Super Bowl anthem that really got everybody's attention with Rovell and him talking about being there when the anthem was being practiced and knowing whether or not it was going to go overtime. You don't understand what kind of effect that has on the betting markets. You don't understand the fact that having that inside information is exactly what people are concerned about when it comes to legalized sports betting and people questioning the integrity of what goes on in the process and why props like what's going to happen with the anthem are super dangerous when it comes to legal sports betting. People conflate what goes on offshore and what goes on in the legal market all the time. They assume that all of these bets on like what Drake will do on the sidelines during the finals, they assume you can get that in Vegas. You can't. You cannot. There is no way the gaming control board would ever approve that sort of thing.
It's all fun and games, Adam Candy. What's the big deal? It's all fun and games, my friend.
Oh, yeah. It's all fun and games until you have things that can be so easily influenced that there is no way a reputable Vegas book would ever go anywhere near it. And that's the sort of thing that we're edging into that territory with Ravel.
Game tonight, 2.5. Golden State at home. I heard Koken make a great point earlier. Dave was saying what? No, last time at Oracle, no Klay Thompson. Line was 4. Why is the line 2.5?
Run away. I want nothing to do with this line.
Why?
Started at 3. What's the value in 2.5? There's nothing. Do you think they're winning or do you think they're not? There's no value in 2.5. The money line values that I saw weren't worth jumping on either side. If I were going to do anything, I told you already, I think Toronto's going to win this game. But do you think Toronto's going to win this game by 2? No, play the money line if you're going to play it at all. Here's the other thing about Golden State. This is just kind of a weird number for this year. Against the spread, playoffs, Golden State, 9-11-1. I don't know if the flaw is on the book side or on the Golden State side, but I don't know if I want to touch that line. Remember, this opened at 3 a lot of places, right? I saw 3 when this opened, 3.5 as an outlier. Now down to 2.5. I just don't like it at all.
I'm going to bet the 2.5. Not listening to your advice.
You're going
to
lay it?
Yeah.
Because you think Golden State fires up for Kevin Durant, like you're going to rip your T-shirt off and show us that Kevin Durant shirt, that energy is going to be in the Warriors tonight?
So basically what were you just telling me, or what you were just telling me, is to bet the money line?
If you're going to do anything to bet the money line.
All right. I think Golden State's going to win. I think it's going to game 7. You?
I got Toronto finishing this thing tonight.
Really?
Yep. Toronto's been the better team all 5 games. I think they're the better team in this series. I think that they are going to win this game tonight.
Wow. Okay. Jared, I don't care about your opinion on this. Your poll question from this morning, what was it?
Vodka and Coke. Delicious or effective?
There has to be a third option here.
Can I answer both? It has to be one or the other?
Yeah, I didn't think about that. That's why it's a dumb question.
I'm going to go with effective. I don't know that I love the taste, but I don't hate the taste.
I mean, come on, dude. That's basically like the 311 of jam bands.
Yeah, you started out in weird fashion with the music talk early in the show. Pre-game, game 6 on the way right here.